Radical, Ross Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, October 28th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And it's the 1 week away from legalizing marijuana in Oregon, in Alaska, in Washington, D.C. We're a week away from medical marijuana in Florida and Guam. We are a week away from Proposition 47 reducing six low-level nonviolent offenses, including simple drug possession, from felonies to misdemeanors. We are just 1 week away from votes in cities in Maine, in Michigan, and two counties in New Mexico to decriminalize and legalize marijuana. That's right, folks. It's Marijuana Legalization Week here at 420 Radio, and we couldn't be more excited. We are so proud to be your source for the latest breaking news having to do with the marijuana reform races in these midterm elections that Bloomberg had declared the marijuana midterms. That's right, folks. These are the body blows to prohibition that we've got to deliver. 2012 in Washington and Colorado were the jabs that got prohibition's attention. These are the body blows in 2014. And in 2016, California will be the knockout punch to prohibition. We're going to cover it all here on our Marijuana Election Night 2014 next week at this exact time, 3 p.m. Pacific time. And we're going to keep going until the polls close in Alaska and we know how things have gone in the Great White North. We've got guests from Drug Policy Alliance, Marijuana Policy Project, Normal, and people at the locations themselves telling us what's going to happen as it happens. We will be here live for you, the marijuana community, on marijuana election night next Tuesday. Make sure you tune in right here at 420radio.org. All right, on today's show, all sorts of great stuff going on, including the latest breaking news on a marijuana legalization poll here in Oregon that's got some people concerned. But in our radical rant, I'm going to show you why this poll is deeply flawed and why the chances for marijuana legalization are bright in Oregon. Also coming up on today's show, we'll take some time to debunk some reefer madness. I've got four of the No on Amendment 2 ads out of Florida. We're going to take some time to take a look at those to show you just how desperate the prohibitionists have become down there in the Sunshine State and to give you the facts about medical marijuana in Florida. Also, in behind the headlines today, you know that federal trial is going on right now. I'm sorry, hearing. It's a hearing that's going on right now. Evidentiary hearing on marijuana's Schedule I status and whether or not it is constitutional. Dr. Carl Hart, one of our favorite human beings in drug law reform, was on the stand and he demolished the federal attorney's attempts to short-circuit this case that could very well decide before Halloween whether or not Schedule I is constitutional and whether or not federal prohibition is invalidated. What a wonderful treat that would be for Halloween. We'll give you all of that plus more, including in drug war data mining. We're going to take a look at the true cost of prohibition, a little country called Mexico just south of us, and some of the devastating statistics that occur because we refuse to regulate our drug trade. All that coming up, plus in hour two, Toker Talk Radio, we're going to take a look at the one case. There actually is one case of a guy who gave marijuana for Halloween candy, but it's not exactly what you would think it is. Jacob Sullum from Reasons got that information for us. And from the alternate, Kristen Gwynn, an excellent story on five senior citizens who are serving life in prison for marijuana right this minute. We'll talk all about that in hour two. Plus, take your calls at 971-533-7111. It's the Russ Belville Show. It's Legalization Week. We are excited, and we'll be right back.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420.
I'm Richard Harris. I directed Oregon's Division of Addictions and Mental Health and led drug treatment programs for years. I can tell you that treating marijuana use as a crime, arresting thousands for marijuana use, is a complete failure. That's why I'm supporting Measure 91. By regulating marijuana for adults and taxing it, we support drug treatment, prevention, schools, and police. Measure 91 means more treatment and less wasteful prosecution. It's a better approach.
Gordon Green's Music Planet, the best of eclectic world music, every Wednesday at 5 and 8 Pacific on...
In all my years on the streets, it's hard to recall a single time where marijuana use itself was the cause of a violent incident. As a police officer, I do believe that passing ballot measure 2 will allow law enforcement to focus on serious issues in Alaska. To me, the regulation of marijuana means safer communities. I'm voting yes on 2.
This communication was paid for by the Campaign to Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol. Top contributors are Marijuana Policy Project, Drug Policy Alliance, and Thomas...
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, October 28th, 2014. Denver police and federal agents on Tuesday morning raided multiple marijuana growing operations across Denver. At one site, a Denver police officer was seen in a blue hazmat suit entering a building on North Bryant Street. The officer's suit reeked of marijuana. He told the Denver Post that he and other police were executing a search warrant and that several were being executed around town. James Goth, group supervisor of the Drug Enforcement Administration's Special Support Unit in Denver, offered little comment about the operation. The Denver Police Department announced on Twitter that area law enforcement agencies were conducting an ongoing investigation into illegal drug activity, but said no further information was available. Oregon voters are closely divided about passing a measure that would legalize recreational marijuana in the state, according to a new poll conducted for The Oregonian and KGW. The October 26th, 27th survey of 403 likely voters found that 44% backed the legalization measure, while 46% were opposed. Another 7% were unsure, and 2% would not say. The difference between the yes and no sides is well within the margins of error of 5 percentage points. The new poll showed a lower level of support for the measure than an October 8th through 11th survey taken for Oregon Public Broadcasting and Fox 12 that showed 52% supported Measure 91 and 41% opposed. All told, 56% of voters aged 18 to 34 said they would back Measure 91, as did 55% of those aged 35 to 50. But voters aged 51 to 64 opposed it 42 to 47%, and seniors were strongly against it, 39% to 54%. Today, United for Care, the largest organization advocating for Amendment 2 on Florida's November ballot, sent a cease and desist letter to all of the television stations broadcasting the latest ad produced by the No on 2 campaign titled, It's Nuts. In the 30-second spot, multiple speakers take turns laying out untruthful and illegitimate claims designed to discourage Floridians from voting for the amendment, which would only allow for the medical use of marijuana by patients with debilitating diseases and medical conditions. According to federal law, FCC licensees have a responsibility to prevent false and misleading advertising from being broadcast on their stations. As the Supreme Court has reaffirmed, Amendment 2 is only for patients with truly debilitating diseases or conditions, a spokesperson for the campaign explained. The federal hearing on marijuana's Schedule 1 designation continues today thanks to a Supreme Court footnote. Attorneys for the government tried 4 times to have the testimony from prominent drug research doctors suppressed, but the judge said in court, quote, "If the Supreme Court had not dropped footnote 37 in the Raich case, I might not deny the motion," end quote. The Raich case is the 2005 decision that says federal law designating marijuana as a substance with, quote, "no currently accepted medical use," end quote, trumps state medical marijuana law. That footnote states, quote, "We acknowledge that evidence proffered by respondents in this case regarding the effect of medical uses for marijuana, if found credible after trial, would cast serious doubt on the accuracy of the findings that require marijuana to be listed in Schedule 1. Respondent's submission, if accepted, would place all homegrown medical substances beyond the reach of Congress's regulatory jurisdiction," end quote. They are unlikely first responders to Islamic militants, but heavily armed cannabis farmers who once fought against the Lebanese army are now turning their weapons against any incursions from Islamic State, the terrorist group called ISIS. It's illegal to grow or sell cannabis in Lebanon, but it's the only life these farmers in the fertile Bekaa Valley near the border with Syria have ever known. In the past, the Lebanese army would descend yearly on this area to destroy the illicit crop, leading to heavy clashes with cannabis farmers. But for the last 2 years, the army has looked the other way while they battle ISIS. Marijuana growers say they'll be the country's first line of defense against any militants coming across the border from Syria, which lies about 40 kilometers from the Bekaa Valley. Lebanon's chief of drugs enforcement, Colonel Chassan Chassandin, admits its manpower has been stretched to the limit and that the cannabis farmers can be useful despite their illegal harvesting activities. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, October 28th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville.
Four Radio is 24-hour marijuana.
The doctor has the right to prescribe OxyContin or any type of prescription like that. They should have the right to recommend medical cannabis for that same patient.
In the 1980s, my mother asked me to help a friend of hers who was terribly nauseous and vomiting every single day from her treatment, and my mother begged me, as since I was a young adult, could I find marijuana for this woman. And it was it's a crime that even all these many years later we still have to illegally get this treatment that really makes a difference for people.
The real concept is Amendment 2 would allow for medical decisions to be made by doctors instead of politicians.
We're asking you to please vote yes on Amendment 2, November 4th, because there are patients that need medication in this state, and they deserve it.
I am.
United for Care.
I'm Pete Tupmark. I spent 33 years in law enforcement, from deputy sheriff to sergeant, working 10 hours a day protecting Oregonians. Last year in Oregon, there were 13,000 citations and arrests for marijuana. That takes time. Time better spent solving murders, rape cases, finding missing children. The system is broken. Measure 91 regulates marijuana for adults, so police have time to fight serious, violent, and unsolved crimes. It's about time.
Welcome back, everybody. 14 after the hour. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And we've been talking about this unprecedented case that's going on in the federal courts right now, where the judge, Kimberly Mueller, is hearing evidentiary testimony in regards to a case that has to do with, I believe it's six guys that were caught growing weed in the national forest. Right. So, but the gist of the case and why it's important to us isn't so much about these guys growing in the forest, spoiling lands, being the black market, whatever it might be, but whether or not the designation of marijuana as a Schedule I substance, which of course would be the law that the government is prosecuting these guys over, whether that Schedule I designation actually passes constitutional muster. The attorneys, Xenia Gilg and others who are with the Normal Legal Committee, and by the way, the next time someone asks, what has Normal ever done for legalization? You can point this out. But Xenia Gilg from Normal Legal Committee is calling on the court to recognize that the Schedule I designation violates equal protection under the Constitution. And basically, she wants to show that the Schedule I designation, saying that marijuana has no medically accepted use in the United States, is bunk. Because there's plenty of medical accepted use in the United States. Among the submissions by the attorneys in this case is the federal government's own patent number 6630507, where it patents the use of cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants. So this didn't get very far in previous cases, but in this case, we might have a better chance. And part of this has to do with that footnote we mentioned in the news. In the 2005 Raich case, Justice Stevens, who wrote the majority opinion in that case, 6-3 against our side, he wrote that, hey, all of this, I'm paraphrasing, this evidence that we got that says there's no medical use, if we find out later that there's medical use, then that would totally change our decision here. That's kind of what he was trying to say. So they've gotten a number of doctors up in front of the justices here, in front of the, I'm sorry, the judge in this case. It's not up to the Supreme Court yet, but up to the judge in this case. And four times the government tried to make this not happen. They made four separate requests to squash this. And the judge pointed to that footnote and said, hey, this footnote said if there's new evidence, we got to take this back up again. And so we are. So some of the people who have been called to testify are guests of this show. Dr. Greg Carter up at University of Washington. He was the first to testify and gave excellent testimony to the court. But today I want to focus on Dr. Carl Hart. Now, if you don't know Dr. Carl Hart, he's an African-American gentleman with very long dreadlocked hair that he keeps tied back. But he's also a professor at Columbia University and very well renowned in his studies of drugs, drug addiction, and so forth. So the assistant U.S. attorney who was in charge of cross-examining him was Gregory Broderick. And he got Dr. Hart on the stand. And the first thing he wanted to attack here was substance use, that marijuana is bad, okay? It's a drug that can lead to addiction. So Broderick asked Dr. Hart about the DSM-4. Now, the DSM, that's the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychology, psychiatry, has a definition of substance abuse disorder, otherwise known as addiction, right? And the attorney for the U.S., Broderick, said, hey, it's been defined by the courts. The courts have accepted that this is a drug of abuse. This is a 9% dependence rate, according to the DSM-4. So he wanted to know what Dr. Hart thought about that. And Dr. Hart says, well, we've got this new version called the DSM-5, and it says tolerance and withdrawal are, quote, normal symptoms to be expected of legitimate medical cannabis use, end quote. So the attorney trying to use DSM to back up his case gets trumped by the new version of DSM that says cannabis use can be used medically. So he tries to recover from this by going after Dr. Hart, you know, attack the messenger and said, oh, some of the, you know, like your son got in trouble with drugs, got in trouble with the law. Your son's had run-ins. Your other members of your family have had run-ins with the law. And Dr. Hart said, quote, I'm a black man in America. You'd be hard pressed to find someone like me who isn't closely connected to someone, end quote, who has been through the penal system. Bam! Just slam that one down. So Broderick continues trying to discredit Dr. Hart and his, you know, his CV out there at Columbia, and says, well, why, if you're supposed to be this expert on medical matters, why don't you have an MD? See, Dr. Hart is a PhD in neuropsychopharmacology, not an MD. And so Dr. Hart replies, I teach at Columbia's medical school. I train doctors. Oh, wow. Wish I was there to see that. And then Broderick brought up the fact that the American Medical Association released statements calling cannabis a dangerous drug. Hart replied, quote, think about what you just said. The AMA committee reads research, such as what I conduct, to form their positions. So why would I go to them for their opinion? Oh, man.
Hey, bud. Let's party.
I hear that Dr. Carl Hart is a bad mother. Shut your mouth. I'm just talking about Dr. Hart. We can dig it. Oh, slam dunk, man. Great work. I tell you, if we get this decision, if this is the October surprise before the legalization midterms, that Schedule 1 is found unconstitutional, my head just may explode. We're back right after this. 420 Radio, the activist radio station.
The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of The Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net. Green Stream Radio with Grandma Cat, Tim Me, and On One from Olympia, Washington. Replaying Tuesdays at 11 Pacific on 420radio.org. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining. Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour. And as we continue Marijuana Legalization Week here at 420 Radio, we want to remind everyone that this isn't about legalization in your city, county, or state. It's not even just about legalization in the United States. It's about legalization globally. And we have to act locally to make a global change. And one of the big global changes that needs to happen is addressing the situation in Mexico. You know, I had to listen to Josh Marquis time after time talk about how marijuana is decriminalized in Oregon and nobody goes to jail for less than 27 grams. We don't ruin anyone's life for less than 27 grams. Yeah, 28 grams, we might ruin your life. But less than 27 grams, no big deal, right? Well, it is a big deal. It is a big deal. Even if you're living in a decrim state, even if you're living in a medical state, that doesn't go far enough because it does not address the marijuana market. So long as there is a demand for marijuana, there will always be a supplier willing to supply it at whatever cost and however many lives it takes to supply it. I've always felt that if the violence that's happening in Mexico over the past decade were happening in American cities, this drug war would have been over long, long ago. More than 60,000 people have been killed from 2006 to 2012. That's according to Human Rights Watch. And some estimates are as high as 80,000 people killed by 2014. There are some other facts you ought to know about this. There are 6,700 licensed firearm dealers in the U.S. along the U.S.-Mexico border. There is only one legal firearms retailer in Mexico. Nearly 70% of the guns recovered from Mexican criminal activity from 2007 to 2011 and traced by the U.S. government originated from sales in the United States. 90% of the cocaine that enters the U.S. transits through Mexico, which is also a major supplier of marijuana and methamphetamines in the United States. And the drug cartels take in between $19 and $29 billion annually from U.S. drug sales. And it's going to start with the legalization and regulation of marijuana markets before any of the rest of this can be addressed. It happens with even a vote for lowest law enforcement priority or public policy questions in your city. Check this video out for some more shocking displays of Mexican cartel violence. Number five. The Durango massacres. The northwestern city of Durango endured an explosion of violence in 2011 when in that year alone over 340 bodies were discovered in mass graves scattered throughout the city. One single grave alone near an empty auto body shop contained 89 bodies. Number four. The
2011 Monterey Casino attack. In August of 2011, a group of four vehicles pulled up to the entranceway of Casino Royale in Nuevo León and opened fire with automatic weapons. Upon ceasing fire, the group dumped gallons of gasoline into the front of the building and set it on fire. The ensuing fire and panic inside resulted in 52 dead civilians, mostly women. The Los Zetas cartel claimed they were merely trying to intimidate the casino owners who had refused to pay cartel extortion money. Number 3. The Nuevo Laredo massacres. In mid-April 2012, 14 men who were presumed to be Los Zetas members were found chopped into pieces in a van, apparently on the orders of the Sinaloa cartel. And that wasn't all the Sinaloa cartel had planned to intimidate their rivals. A few weeks later, a further 23 bodies were discovered. Of the 23 people killed, 9 of their bodies were hanged from a bridge to the utter horror of civilians of Nuevo Laredo. The other 14 corpses were found decapitated, with their heads stuffed in ice coolers. Number 2. Hugo Hernandez murder. In 2010, then 26-year-old Hugo Hernandez was kidnapped from the city of Sonora. A week later, his body was found on the street in the northern city of Las Muchas. He had been chopped into 7 pieces. Hernandez torso was found in a plastic container on the street, separate from the other box that contained his arms, legs, and skull. His head, face was skinned off his skull and stitched onto a soccer ball, an apparent threat to the Juarez drug cartel. And number 1. Shocking display of Mexican cartel violence. Jesus Ernesto Chavez Castillo. Castillo was a one-man death squad. He has murdered more than 800 people on behalf of Barrio Aztecas gang, the deadly enforcers of the Zetas. He even testified that he has killed more, but that he has lost count. Chavez went so far as to tell jurors that he often beheaded or dismembered his victims. That's what this drug war is about. 420 Radio, the home. A mom and grandma from No on Measure 91 explains why to vote yes on Measure 91.
I see what's happening with marijuana. The kids are telling me. They say within 5 minutes they can get marijuana. It's much easier than tobacco or alcohol to get into their hands.
Because drug dealers don't check ID, vote yes on Measure 91. This advertisement produced by the Russ Melville Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign.
If you're an adult who enjoys a good beer, there's a similar product you might want to know about. One without all the calories and serious health problems. Less toxic so it doesn't cause hangovers or overdose deaths, and it's not linked to violence or reckless behavior. Marijuana. Less harmful than alcohol, and time to treat it that way. For more information, visit marijuanaissafer.org.
Treating marijuana as a crime in Oregon has failed. Police are spending way too much time working on simple marijuana possession cases. Too many people are being busted. Oregon wastes millions of taxpayer dollars while illegal drug dealers are making a huge untaxed profit. But after Measure 91 passes, we'll have a better approach, a smarter approach, like what's happening in Washington, where marijuana-related arrests have plummeted. Oregon police will be able to refocus their precious and limited resources on serious crime, and Oregon's Measure 91 can save and generate millions of dollars. Oregon needs a better approach to marijuana. Vote yes on Measure 91, paid for by Yes on 91.
Marijuana is an addictive drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death. Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind. If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face-to-face with the monster of marijuana, he'd drop dead from fright.
You know, it's not easy countering 7 decades of propaganda in a 2-hour show, but let's try. It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Reefer Madness Debunked.
Welcome back, everyone. Half past the hour. And in Reefer Madness Debunked today, we're taking a look at 4 new ads. Well, one of them's brand new. From the No On Amendment 2 campaign down there in Florida. During the news segment, we mentioned this first ad that we're going to show you called It's Nuts. And I'll tell you, the apostrophe is very important in that sentence. It's Nuts, which was decried by the United for Care campaign as showing factually incorrect information, outright lies. And Their theory is that the FCC mandates that stations not carry misleading advertising, that they must be truth in advertising. It's a nice public relations stunt, but I have little faith that it's going to get anywhere, judging from the campaign ads that I see all over the place for everything. If we had to hold every campaign ad to a strong standard of truth, I don't think there'd be any campaign ads. But maybe these ads go a little too far. So we're going to take a look at them. The first one is called It's Nuts. There's another one called Not What It Seems. A third ad called It's a Trick. And the fourth one called For the Reefer. And we'll just work on these together. We'll take a look at these videos and see what they show us. We also know about 85% of the money that went into the No on 2 campaign came from one guy, billionaire, tycoon, casino magnate Sheldon Adelson of Nevada, is pretty much the financier of the No on Amendment 2 campaign in Florida. I don't know what he's got against Floridians using medical marijuana, but we shall see. Here's the first ad. It's nuts.
Amendment 2, it's a trick.
It's not about compassion. It just legalizes pot smoking.
It's nuts. No prescription, not just for serious diseases, and not approved by the FDA.
How do they know it's safe? They don't.
Pot would be exempt from medical standards.
Kids can legally get it without their parents' permission.
Amendment 2.
No FDA regulation.
No prescription.
No parental control. How do you stop it? You vote no on 2.
Wow, it's amazing what a few million dollars can buy for you, although I'm feeling a little seasick from the shifting camera angles. Let's tackle a few of those. First of all, this claim that Florida's Amendment 2 would allow kids to be able to go get medical marijuana, complete bunk. Florida already has a law on the books that says for any non-emergency medical treatment, a minor in Florida needs parental consent. That would cover getting medical marijuana, by the way. So that is a complete lie coming out of the No on 2 campaign, trying to scare people by saying that kids will be able to easily get medical marijuana. And this other scare about no prescriptions. Well, it doesn't have any prescriptions. There's no prescriptions. Yeah, like the other 23 medical marijuana states, because the federal government maintains the Schedule I status of cannabis that makes it impossible for doctors to prescribe. Blaming Florida Amendment 2 for not having some sort of prescription mandate in it is blaming it for doing what it has to do to be a medical marijuana law. Same for this FDA approval. FDA hasn't approved of medical marijuana since California started it in 1996. What is Florida worried about? That somehow it's going to turn into a raging hellscape like Connecticut or New Mexico or Montana or Vermont or any of the other states that have medical marijuana? And this scare about it's going to legalize pot smoking. It's just going to legalize pot smoking. Completely untrue. Legal pot smoking would mean I could fly to Florida, get off the plane, and smoke pot. That's not what's going to happen. I would have to be a resident of Florida. I would have to go see a doctor. I would have to show him my medical condition, get an examination, get a recommendation, sign up with the state. That's not legalized pot smoking. Let's see what they do in this one. This is called Not What It Seems.
Amendment 2 isn't what it seems. Its caregiver provision gives legal protection to marijuana dealers. Even felons and drug dealers could be caregivers. Amendment 2 caregivers don't need background checks or medical training. So what looks like a safeguard is really a loophole. Amendment 2 caregivers can't be arrested or sued if their pot hurts someone. They don't call it the Drug Dealer Protection Act, but they should. Vote no. On Amendment 2.
Wow. The Drug Dealer Protection Act, huh? Okay, so this is where they're attacking caregivers. And this is what we got in most medical marijuana states. Most states have this already, Florida. There's nothing to fear here. I'm a caregiver in the state of Oregon. Do I look like a drug dealer or a felon? I'm not. I've never sold marijuana in my life. This ridiculous scare tactic is this idea that because someone could become a caregiver for someone, even if they had had a limited previous encounter with the law over marijuana, they're calling those people drug dealers. So, for example, Suppose you got a husband and wife. The wife's got, Lou Gehrig's disease. And the husband, may have been popped for growing marijuana back in the day before there was such a thing as medical marijuana so that he could take care of his wife with Lou Gehrig's disease. He would be the caregiver for the wife, despite the fact that under the eyes of the law, he'd be a convicted drug dealer or a convicted drug manufacturer or whatever the hell it might be. Again, they got nothing to stand on because they know 23 other states have this. The people overwhelmingly support allowing people to use medical marijuana in accordance with their doctor's recommendation. So they've got to resort to tricks and lies and scaremongering, trying to convince people that the people behind Amendment 2 were seriously writing this with the intent of protecting drug dealers. That like people are saying, well, I know, let's write a medical marijuana law and fool them into protecting drug dealers. And then those drug dealers will what? Contribute to their political campaigns? Like drug dealers are wont to do, you know, filling out all those election forms and such. God, it just makes no sense on its face. And it's pretty shameful these are being run. Here's another one from the No on Two people in Florida. This one's called It's a Trick.
I'm a doctor. This is my prescription pad, and you won't need it to legally buy pot under Amendment 2. Amendment 2 is a trick. It's written to make you think pot will require a prescription, like FDA-approved medications. It won't. Under Amendment 2, marijuana would be sold in pill mill-style pot shops, unapproved and unregulated by the FDA. Amendment 2, there's nothing medical about this marijuana.
Wow. You know, if commercials had been out like this in California in 1996, I don't know if we'd have had medical marijuana. You know, everything they're saying is bunk, and we're debunking all of it, but it's really well-produced bunk. This is what a professional political campaign can bring out against you. Now, this idea that medical marijuana will be sold anywhere is also another falsehood, because the Florida Act there, the amendment, gives plenty of regulatory power to determine through zoning and other regulations where pot shops are going to be located, where dispensaries are going to be located. And again, this thing about, well, you won't need my prescription pad to be able to buy pot. Right. But you will need to see a doctor just like you. See, this is the telling lies by what's unwritten in it, right? I'm a doctor, and this is my prescription pad, and you won't need this if you want to buy pot. The implication there is, there's no medical involved. I won't be seeing a doctor. I can just go buy pot, which is not at all what it is. You'll still have to see a doctor, but that doctor will be writing you a recommendation. Instead of this pad here, it'll be this note paper here. Ooh, it'll be different pieces of paper. My goodness, how scary that is. Again, a scare tactic being promulgated upon the people of Florida to make them think this is something about drug dealing, to make them think that, what do they think, the Mexican cartels are writing this language? These are people who brought this forth to you, Florida, who had to deal with their own family members suffering and dying from debilitating illnesses that are so easily and effectively treated by cannabis, it moved them to pump 4 or 5 million of their own money into it. It's not about making money, it's about saving lives. Here's the final one, for the reefer.
I'm trying to legalize medical marijuana. I might smoke a lot of grass. If you motherfuckers don't get up and vote, it all, we can't win.
Now, the tagline on that, Amendment 2 is not medical marijuana. Amendment 2 legalizes pot. And that is a video that was shot that showed John Morgan, the man who put $4 million or $5 million of his own money into this campaign, a little bit drunk. You know, there's a campaign party. And they're trying to paint this like they painted the Howard Dean scream moment, if you remember that election. Trying to make it seem, see, this is just about partying and fun and you know, legalizing pot. Well, you're talking in a bar where people are consuming a drug far more harmful than the marijuana we're talking about. And we're talking about young people that are campaign volunteers. They'd just be just as excited and just as celebratory if they were campaigning against GMO labeling, if they were campaigning against driver's license for illegal immigrants, whatever the issue might be, you'd get the same reaction for it. The fact that people are partying and the fact that people are celebrating and cheering each other on in an election campaign doesn't mean they don't have serious compassion and serious intent to help sick and disabled people. And as far as John Morgan saying, you motherfuckers got to get out and vote, that's true. People do have to get out and vote if they want to see this passed. If they want to see people who are sick, if they want to see people who are suffering debilitating illnesses to no longer be treated as criminals and felons for merely growing a plant whose use of which, even when it's abused, is far safer than the alcohol and the OxyContin that Florida is awash in. It is so clear to me that the state of Florida runs on alcohol. I've visited the state at least 4 or 5 times in the past year and a half. The state runs on alcohol, and the state is awash in prescription opiate abuse. Those are the forces that don't want to see legalized medical marijuana in Florida. My hope that the people listening in Florida will be voting and encouraging everyone else they know to vote. They need 60% in Florida, and I'm not sanguine on the chances of that. I think if this had been statutory initiative, that it would have easily passed 55-56%. But that won't cut it in an election that needs 60 for a constitutional amendment. So we need every single vote. Everyone you know in Florida needs to vote for this. I'll be calling my friends. Make sure you call yours. When we come back, we will debunk the Oregonians' latest poll on Measure 91. I'll show you why it's way off on its figures when we come back.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio. Fighting prohibition since 2012. Project Sam's Kimber Richter for the No on 91 campaign worries about marijuana's social cost.
We won't even be able to project what the public health harms will be. And the cost that we're seeing now, the $1 in tax revenue for the $10 in social costs, you know, who knows where that's going to be with marijuana.
Colorado and Washington have made $45 million in tax revenue to date. Yet nobody claims they've suffered $450 million in social costs. Learn the facts. Vote yes on Measure 91. This advertisement produced by the Russ Bellville Show and is not sponsored or endorsed by the Yes on Measure 91 campaign. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Bellville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
I want to be a track star.
No one ever says, I want to be a junkie when I grow up.
Well, I want to be a ballerina.
Yet thousands of kids let getting high make a mess of their lives.
I want to be a nurse.
Don't let drugs get in the way of your dreams.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Bellville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. New Approach Oregon is a coalition of Oregon citizens who believe that treating marijuana use as a crime has failed, costing taxpayers millions in law enforcement resources. Our approach will regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana for adults in Oregon. We can move Oregon forward and create new revenue for critical services. Visit our website at newapproachoregon.com or our page on Facebook at New Approach Oregon. Thank you.
You can't handle the truth.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law.
10 federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
How in the century can you have learned the meaning of the words we, the people?
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
All right, welcome back, everyone. 46 after the hour, and earlier in the show, we made reference to a new poll that's out from KGW, which is our NBC affiliate here in Portland, and the Oregonian, which is the largest daily newspaper by circulation in the Pacific Northwest. That's right, Portland's Oregonian is the most circulated paper, more so than any of the Seattle papers. So we're going to take a look at this poll. Let me give you the top line from it, though. This is the first thing, and I got a lot of tweets from people today on this. A lot of people were worried. I think the first tweet I saw said, rut-row, like Scooby-Doo's on this case. The survey found, this is a 403 voter survey, and this was conducted just Sunday and Monday. And it says 44% backed the legalization measure, while 46% were opposed. Another 7% were unsure, and 2% would not say. The margin of error is 5 percentage points. Okay, so people are scared. It's like, oh my God, 44% yes, 46% opposed. Now, my first concern about this poll was the previous poll that we took on marijuana legalization in November of 2012. November 6th, I believe it was. That was the OCTA 2012 measure, the Oregon Cannabis Tax Act, which was extremely pro-pot and incredibly liberal. And it got 46% of the vote. So I refuse to believe any poll that puts Measure 91 at below 46%. It initially set off my skepticism radar right off the bat. We got 46% of Oregonians who will vote for anything that has marijuana in it. So 44% yes, that seemed a little sketchy to me. So the next thing I wanted to take a look at was, who's the pollster? Some pollsters are better than others. This pollster was Elway Research, an independent polling firm in Seattle. Now, that was my second skepticism meter, because John Elway is one of the quarterbacks in NFL history I hate the most for having beaten the Packers in a Super Bowl. Now, I know he has nothing to do with Elway Research in Seattle, but the name alone is enough to make me a little bit suspicious. See, Packer mania, man. Anyway, their poll from 2012, I thought it might be interesting to look on their polls for Initiative 502. If they're a polling firm based in Seattle, they had to have polled on Initiative 502, right? Well, my good friend John Walker out there at Just Say Now on Fire Dog Lake blog points to an article written October 24th, 2012. This was in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer. And it was their poll on Initiative 502. And according to Elway Research, Initiative 502 is ahead 48 to 44. So they were calling 48% support for Initiative 502. And as we all know, it finished with 55% support. So they were only off, 7 points, 2 weeks away from the election. And just to see if it was, just the marijuana measure that made the difference, I decided to look at another vote from 2012. Washington had a referendum. It was a referendum number 74. It was one of those gay marriage things, right? Should we allow gay marriage? And that's the basic breakdown. There's a lot more detail to that than that, but there's the basics for you, right? Elway polled on that too in 2012 and said referendum 74 leads 49-45. 49-45. And undecideds often break no in statewide elections. Okay. 49-45. What did it turn out to be? 54-46. So they're off 5 points on that one. All right. So their history of polling doesn't look too good to me, but still, maybe there's something to this poll, right? So I decided then to start taking a look at the breakdown, because a lot of times in polls, you got this situation where they're calling landlines. And if you're calling landlines only, you're getting old people. Name a person you know under the age of 50 who still has a landline. It's not a whole lot of people anymore. But that wasn't the case. This is, you know, they're using modern polling techniques, got cell phones and landlines. That's cool. The problem, however, is in their sample of people. We're talking about 403 people that they sampled and a margin of error of 5 percentage points. Most polls come in with a margin of error of 3 to 4, not 5. And it's 5 because it's such a small sample size, only 403 voters, right? But here's the real flaw, the huge chink in the armor of this poll. The Oregonian KGW survey taken by pollster Stuart Elway has a sample showing that 71% of the electorate will be aged 51 or older. Why? Let me say that again to you. 71% of the people in this poll were aged 51 and older. Now, that means only 29% are aged 50 and younger, right? And those are the people who support legalization. People aged 18 to 34 supported it for 56%. 55% of people aged 35 to 50 support it. So you got a 55 to 56% support among the people under age 50, and you're only going to count 29% of those people? But when you count the people 51 and older, the people 51 and older, 51 to 64, oppose it at 42% support, and seniors 65 and older, 39% support. So you're going to say, you're going to take 7 out of 10 of the voters that are 42 and 39%, and only 3 out of 10 of the voters that are 55 and 56%, and say that's a representative sample. Now, critics would say, but Russ, it's a midterm election. In a midterm election, you get a lot greater turnout of older voters and a lot less turnout of younger voters. And I know that. But then again, I had to say, wait a minute, really? Only 29% voters, 50 and younger in a midterm? That seems low. So I took a look at the U.S. Census. And in the U.S. Census, we have got, let me see if we can find those census numbers. In the U.S. Census, they found, I took a look at the 2010 midterm election stats, what they might be. And it turned out that in the midterm election, that 66.9% of all voters were aged 45 and older. Not 51 and older, 45 and older. So two-thirds of the voters are 45 and older. That would mean far less than two-thirds are 51 and older, right? Maybe 60% of the voters, maybe 62% of the voters, but whatever. So in a situation where in the 2010 midterm election, it was about 66, 67% of 45 and olders, you're going to project that 71% of the voters will be even older. An even older cohort will make an even greater percentage of this midterm election. And this midterm election isn't the 2010 midterm election. The 2010 midterm election in Oregon had a ballot measure for the medical marijuana dispensaries, measure 74, that failed with like 44%, right? This midterm election has legalization on the ballot. This has legalization on the ballot following historic wins in Colorado and nearby Washington. So do you really think that as the young people today in Oregon, age 30 and younger, are traipsing across the bridge to Vancouver to shop at the two best-selling pot shops in the state, you don't think they're aware that for the simple price of a stamp and marking an oval, they could have that in their city? They could have legalization? You only think 29% of the voters are going to be young people? I think you've seriously, seriously miscast how this election's going to break down. And evidence of that, according to Oregon Public Broadcasting, this was in a broadcast on October 23rd, Oregon registers record number of voters for midterm elections. Nearly 2.2 million Oregonians registered to vote this year. That's 127,000 more voters than the last midterm election in 2010. More than 50,000 new voters signed up in October alone. This tells me that the efforts by the Measure 91 campaign, and for that measure, for that matter, the Measure 92 campaign, we got a big GMO fight here in Oregon with about equal spending. It's the largest campaign ever in Oregon, money-wise, as far as the advertising spent on it, between labeling or not labeling GMO foods. That is a huge get out the vote for younger people too in Oregon who want GMOs labeled. And perhaps it's also a turnout for the older people who are farmers. I don't know how that's going to break down and how that's going to affect the marijuana election. But it's my belief that we will have far greater than 29% of the voters in this will be people under the age of 50 in this election. It'll be far greater than just 29%. And again, if OCTA got 46%, and then legalization has happened in the 2 years after it got 46%. And then the 2 years after that, we don't have the sky falling in Washington and Colorado. I've got to believe that Measure 91 gets better than 46% at least. Now, a lot of the internal polls show this as still doing well. I think it's going to be close. I do think this poll tells us it's going to be close, and it tells us how important it is to make sure that all of our friends have voted. There's this great app that people are passing around on Facebook called Did You Vote? And I think you can get it at didyouvote.org or didyouvote.com, something like that. And what it does is it accesses your Facebook friends, and then it also cross-references them to the Oregon Secretary of State vote database. We actually have a database that says whether or not you've turned your ballot in. Doesn't say that, you know, who you voted for or anything, but did you turn your ballot in? So it can find all your Facebook friends who haven't turned their ballot in Oregon and gives you the opportunity to send them a personal message to remind them to vote yes on Measure 91. It's going to be close in Oregon. We're not going to get the 55-45 that Washington or Colorado got just because it's not a presidential election year. And the typical drop-off, they say, and this I got this from MPP head Rob Campia himself, the typical drop-off is 3%. In a midterm election for your support for marijuana legalization. So if we go in with the same 55 that Washington and Colorado got, I'm thinking we end up at 52 this year. I think if you're going to mark me down for my prediction, I think Measure 91 goes 52-48 and we win this thing. I think Washington, D.C. is a slam dunk. I'd be surprised if it doesn't top 60 in Washington, D.C. Alaska, don't know about Alaska. That's too close to call for me. I think it's tending on the no side at this point. I think Alaska might be like a 49%er. I'd like to see it do better. And I think Alaska can do better. And Florida? Florida, I think, will do well. I mean, I think it'll get 56, 57%. But it won't be enough to be a constitutional amendment. We'll talk more about that. Plus, we got some other stories in Hour 2 to talk about. Jacob Sullum from Reason has found the one case of someone giving out marijuana to kids on Halloween. But it's not exactly what you think. Also, five senior citizens in America currently serving life in prison over pot. We'll tell you their names, their stories. Give you yet another reason to vote to end this madness. But that's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. For everyone here at 420radio.org, I'm Radical Russ. Join us election night, 1 week from tonight. Live, we'll break it all down for you. But until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
I'm Paul Stiegler. I spent 30 years in law enforcement, beat cop to deputy sheriff, working 10 hours a day to protect and serve. Last year in Oregon, there were 13,000 citations and arrests for marijuana. SN 91 will allow law enforcement to focus on serious crimes, unsolved murders, rapes, missing kids. Measure 91 also mandates that Oregon develop standardized tests for driving under the influence, which we don't have now. That'll make our streets and highways safer. Yes on 91.
Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation.
What are you people? On dope?
Where you can toke.
I inhale frequently.
Or you can talk.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
Or you can toke and talk.
10 federal criminal penalties.